I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Kim Sorvig. He is a Research Associate Professor of Architecture and Planning at the University of New Mexico, and he's an expert on sustainability and ecological impacts. Diane Senior is a member of the Rural Conservation Alliance. Jan Willem Janssens is president of Ecotone and expert on wildlife and watershed issues. And we're here today to talk about La Bajada Mesa. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mayor Charlotte. Thank you.
So, first of all, where is La Bajada Mesa for those of you who perhaps are new in town or don't know the area that well?
So La Bajada Mesa, most people know it for when they're traveling from Albuquerque to Santa Fe on I-25. As you're approaching Santa Fe, you hit a very, very steep hill that then tops out into a wide open expanse. And for many people, that's the place that says they're coming home. And that is La Bajada Mesa. It is has been a part of New Mexico history for centuries and was the traditional dividing line between northern and southern New Mexico. And for many people, it still is that place of transition.
And that's the place where when you get to the top of it, coming from Albuquerque, you can see Santa Fe spreading out below you, whether
Absolutely.
It's at night and it's all lit up or...
Yep.
And it's 10 degrees cooler in the summer.
Now, there is a proposed gravel mining project at La Bajada Mesa, which would take up, something like 5,000 acres of the mesa?
The proposal itself is for a 50-acre parcel on the top of the mesa. But the land itself that parcel is a piece of is a greater than 5,000 acre tract that's currently up for sale. But what's being proposed right now is a rezoning for 50 acres of that to allow gravel strip mining to occur.
Now, who owns the land currently?
The land is owned by a company called Buena Vista Estates, and that's the company who has that on the international market right now for sale, promoting its mining potential.
And how is it currently zoned? Can you mine there?
No, and that's the reason that the application is currently before the county. So currently the property is zoned, as most of the land out in the rural part of the county is, as 40-acre residential. And that basically means that it can be used for residence or agriculture, but at a maximum density of one house per 40 acres. What the owners of the property now are doing is applying to the county and asking for that to be rezoned to allow them, instead of having traditional ranching, agriculture, or residences, to in fact use up the mesa and strip mine it for gravel.
Is there the idea that it wouldn't just be this 50 acres but a larger piece of it?
That is certainly a likely possibility. This is actually the fourth application that's come before the county attempting to allow mining on top of the mesa. The very first proposal actually came in about 2002, I believe, that proposed to strip mine 2 miles of the top of the mesa. And when there was not support for that in the county, that application was withdrawn. And subsequent attempts have tried to scale that back. One attempt was in 2005, which proposed a 108-acre site, but actually in the application actually said that it was an initial site because the top of the mesa is basalt, and they are attempting to get a foot in the door with zoning to actually establish it as a mining zone. That makes future expansion much easier.
So that if it were rezoned for 50 acres and then they wanted to do another 50 acres and then another 50 and then another 100... Since the precedent was there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and because they also own that vast piece of property, they would be, it would be their property that they were attempting to expand.
Now, the permits were denied in all the past applications. Why was that, for rezoning it to be a mining property?
It never came to an official denial. What happens, there's a series of steps that it goes through, and the recommendation was going to be to deny, and the applications were withdrawn. But it was withdrawn based on a number of factors. One of the most critical was that the county did not support the use of hauled water because there are no there are no utilities out at that site in terms of or infrastructure in terms of water or sewer. And so in order to provide the water necessary for mining, the applicants actually need to truck haul water out to the site. And the county did not support that in the previous applications. And they also found that the mining as a use of that land was incompatible with neighboring uses and historical use of the land. And that certainly has not changed.
How is the land being used now?
It's agricultural.
What kind of agriculture is going on there?
Grazing, as far as I understand. So fairly low-level agricultural use. The topsoil is really thin, 4 to 6 inches, so you probably can't grow much out there. And as far as I understand it, that's been the main use in living memory.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the top of the mesa is actually known as La Majada. La Bajada is the descent down,
right.
But La Majada is actually sheepfold, and that is historically what the land has been used for, is grazing.
Now, let's talk for a moment about water. First of all, why does a gravel mine need so much water?
They're asking for nearly 1 million gallons a year, which, just to put it in context, at a rough estimate, that would support 100 households in Santa Fe. Perhaps more because Santa Feans have learned to conserve water in their household use. But 1 million gallons a year is what they're estimating just to control the dust. In other words, they spray it on anything that generates dust and spray it into the air, where it turns the dust into some kind of mud and prevents it, they claim, from spreading throughout the county. There are quite a few people that don't think this is going to be effective and don't think that the 750,000 gallons that they have in their proposal is sufficient for that. So not only will they be trucking it in and using it, they won't get the desired results.
Now, hang on. You just said 1 million gallons, and then you said 750,000.
Right. Easier to say 1 million for starters, but 750,000 gallons is still very significant. Our concern is that the county utility, which has offered to sell them this potable, treated, at public expense water, has sent them a letter saying, sure, we'll sell it to you, with no conditions whatsoever. There's no conditions on how much they use. There are no guarantees that they will pay the same price as everyone else. And there's certainly no requirement that when the city and county residents who use water are under stage 3 drought restrictions and can't water their trees, that the quarry will be prevented from having their share of water because they can pay for it.
Interesting. So, I mean, water is a zero-sum game in New Mexico, and ever more so. There's only so much water. There seems to be a little less every year, and how to conserve it is a question. So 750,000 in the proposal, but if they end up using 1 million or twice that much or whatever is needed to control the dust, I mean, is there any regulation on that kind of thing?
In terms of the water use or the dust?
I guess both. I mean, are there regulations on dust control?
The regulations on dust control in mining operations, what's regulated is actually the crusher machine itself, and that is for worker safety. That's what they're required to regulate dust on, and that's what they're going to be using the water for that they're hauling. So they're going to be using potable county-provided water for dust control on the crusher apparatus. What is not regulated is what is termed fugitive dust, which is the dust that we all see blowing around from disturbed areas. So they're actually not required to regulate that dust, and there is insufficient water currently budgeted even to manage the dust coming out of the crushing equipment, no less control fugitive dust. And you're talking about 50 acres of disturbed soil on a very, very windy mesa top.
And for a very long term. In ordinary landscape construction, it's very common practice to stockpile topsoil, and the applicants have put that in their application, but it's meaningless in the context of mining. If you stockpile soil for as long as a month in this climate, it will completely dry out and all the beneficial organisms that make soil worth having will be dead, and you'll be spreading dead mineral soil when you put it back. On a landscape scale, it's possible both to cover it, keep it moist, and put it back within a month. But these guys claim they're going to be there for 25 years and taking the top half a foot off of 50 acres. Those are huge stockpiles. There are also limits in landscape practice of about 4 foot being the maximum pile that you can make. And if you've got more than that, you have to make multiple piles. They're not going to do that. And as a result, any of what they like to call overburden, meaning soil that's in their way, anything that they stockpile will simply turn into dust and be blown across the county.
We're talking about La Bajada Mesa and the proposed gravel mining project at La Bajada. So let's just finish up on the question of water. As it is now, where does the county stand on this project and water use for this project? I mean, the decision hasn't been made whether to rezone this property yet. Is that correct?
That's correct. The decision has not been made. There is a process that the application goes through, whereas first the application is reviewed by county staff, who makes their recommendations to the County Development Review Committee. The County Development Review Committee is the meeting that is coming up this coming Thursday. That's Thursday, March 20th at 4 o'clock p.m. at 102 Grant Avenue in Santa Fe. That is the hearing where the County Development Review Committee will make their recommendations on whether to approve or deny the application. At that point, it then goes to the Board of County Commissioners, who makes the final decision. The county has not yet weighed in on this, but the county as an entity has not weighed in on this. But the county water utilities has in fact issued a letter to the applicant saying that they are willing and able to provide potable county water from their facilities to the applicants for use for dust control on the site. And there are, as Kim said, no limits put on that in terms of the volume that they can use or in terms of what happens in, if it's a drought situation or if residents need to take precedence.
I don't even remember that it says specifically that it's for use for dust control. They're willing and able to provide water, sure.
Yeah, the letter might not.
I don't think the letter says anything. There was no public process, and that decision was made by staff members at the utility who are not part of the zoning and approval process. And as far as I can see, they did this without any consultation with anybody, probably even including the legal department.
So, I mean, that brings up some questions, like what happens if it's a bad drought year? What happens if it's a bad wildfire year? Mm-hmm. Are there competing uses of that water, and would a gravel mine get precedence over those other uses?
Well,
I'm trying to understand this.
There is a famous saying in New Mexico that around here, water runs uphill to money. So the gravel mine being a for-profit operation and having apparently pretty deep pockets if they own 5,000 acres out there on the mesa, probably will be able to pay at the same rate that your residential consumers do for per gallon at a time when the residential users are not allowed to pay for or use the water. So it's quite the opposite of what I would expect if we're trying to be good stewards of water, that in the same way as we say landscapes are not a matter of life and death, you turn off the irrigation during a major drought, gravel mining is not life and death either, and yet they will be permitted to continue buying and trucking water, and they almost certainly will not be subject to any limitations based on drought conditions.
Yeah, I'd like to add that in Santa Fe County, the city of Santa Fe and the county work together for the distribution of water and also for gathering water supply. That's done in a way that's called conjunctive use. That means that actually there are multiple sources of water that are being viewed at the same time and the optimal combination of sources is being used at any time and being balanced out over time to address issues of drought, for instance. So if there is a drought, it basically means that more groundwater will be pumped. So at this point, since we have the Buckman direct diversion since a couple of years, more water is basically being used that comes down the Rio Grande that's being transferred through the Rio Chama. And there are wells associated with that water diversion system. But at the same time, water is also being used from the Santa Fe River coming down from the mountains and from groundwater and water that is being treated through the wastewater treatment plant. And so all these uses are being considered in the allocation of water. And now for this specific purpose, water apparently is being targeted, that is being processed, is being treated as drinking water. So that is, it's not even the water that comes out of the wastewater treatment plant. It is water that has that is being treated with basically added value for our community as drinking water. And so, again, to make clear that if we're actually in a drought period, then we're using more groundwater, actually, because that will be supplemented to offset waters that we don't have from surface water. And we, of course, then have less drinking water to go around in the community.
It's important to remember, too, that many people, household users in the area of Cedillos and Madrid, are trucking water from this same outlet at the prison. And no matter where the water comes from or what you think of it being sold as treated at public cost, the number of trucks that are going to be required to fill up their big trucks, they're going to be competing with the residential users, people who go to fill their pickup-sized tank and take it home are going to be waiting to have the mining company fill up very large tanker trucks. There's also the issue of what those tanker trucks do to the roads, of the danger of car-to-tanker collisions, which will be increased. There are some serious issues that are related to water, but not directly about water.
Yeah, and before we actually leave the topic of water, one of the things I want to point out is that the water budget that they've put forth in the application is for dust control only. There has been no budget established for the reclamation that Kim talked about earlier. And there's also an interesting side note that there's been no water budgeted for gravel washing. And gravel washing is a very water-intensive but normal part of gravel productions, and there's absolutely no reference to that. What's particularly interesting about that is, in fact, they do plan to do gravel washing because they've also got a parallel application still running with the Office of the State Engineer to transfer water rights, which has been stalled for a while. And that application specifically cites gravel washing as one of the uses for that water.
So that 3/4 million annual gallons of water could end up being, I mean, is there an estimate of how much more it could be?
I've only done the estimate for what it could actually be for the dust control based on the equipment that they have. And at a minimum, it appears that they've underestimated their water consumption by half and possibly as much as by 11 million gallons just for the dust control.
You see why I'm not too concerned about saying 1 million gallons for 3/4 million.
So what would, let's talk about the land itself. What would a gravel mine mining over a period of 25 years, starting at 50 acres, perhaps expanding to, we know not how much of La Bajada Mesa, what would it do to the land? What would the land be after the whole thing was finished?
Yeah, I think that people should imagine various things. From the perspective of the larger landscape, a mine like this basically fragments the continuity of the vegetation. It fragments the continuity of water flows. It fragments the visual quality of the landscape, the open vistas. It is a barrier to wildlife migration, especially bear, cougar, deer, pronghorn, if they're there. And that is a major problem in that neck of the woods. And then just the integrity of the landscape itself, the fact that we've just been talking about all the constituent parts of the landscape, but a landscape is just not only parts, and that is the background of this entire amenity use through a mine. A landscape is a whole, and we experience it often as a whole, and that is going to be broken apart, and specifically in this location, the transition of having a sense of integrity, of wholeness of the landscape before you enter into a fragmented urban landscape like of Santa Fe is so special about this landscape, and that many people don't want to lose, and for which many people actually live in this area to enjoy that, to appreciate it, and for which we have many visitors coming to this area.
So when visitors were coming to Santa Fe, or we're coming home from Albuquerque to Santa Fe, the people who live here, when you came up the hill, how would it change?
What it would do is you cannot immediately see it from I-25, at least not the whole of the pit, because that's for 50% concealed, although there have been studies done of viewshed by which you can actually, from certain viewpoints along I-25 and other highways in the region from a greater distance, actually see parts of this mine operation.
This is just a 50-acre pit. If they expand it 10 times or 100 times that large, obviously the visibility and the fragmentation and so on that Jan Willem is talking about is multiplied by an enormous factor.
Well, and in addition to that, like you just said, we have not only just the pit, we have the trucks driving back and forth. We will have dust, especially if they're only using 750,000 gallons per year. And there is, although they might want to shade the lights in some way, there will be night sky pollution in some way combined with dust in the air. And for instance, the Cirrus Hills State Park that has a growing stargazing program, clear night skies that are unobstructed are very important. And for people in Santa Fe viewing west, looking west, to the sunset or the late afternoon colors in the landscape and the sky, this is a very, very important area. Tens of thousands of high-end homes in Santa Fe view west over this mesa, are built onto the front range of Santa Fe's mountains, and enjoy this view that is currently unobstructed and for which we don't want to have any interference.
And so that would presumably hurt the property values of that land.
Absolutely. So the impact, and that is what I mean with the integrity, is just not only on the side. The impact has stretches for 10, 15 miles around the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I can add to that, this mesa is visible, as Jan Willem just said, for 15 to 20 miles around. The pit itself, what's been analyzed in terms of visibility, is the surface area of that 50 acres. Associated with that are, they're allowed to have equipment that's up to 35 feet high. They're going to have tailing piles. They're going to have materials piles. The lighting will be on 20-foot high poles. And even though we do have dark sky ordinances here in Santa Fe County, there are major exceptions to that, including for security. And in their application, they've already said that they're going to have night lighting on the equipment and on the sheds for security purposes. So these things are enormously impactful for many people around. And especially for the people who are in the rural areas to the south of the mesa, whose property holds virtually no value beyond the view, because there are no city-provided services. There is no water provided, there is no electric, there's no phones, there's no sewers, there's nothing. So it is the view that is the inherent value of those properties.
One of the things that's got to be considered is that the mine will be blasting. This is not a gravel pit where they go in with a shovel and dig gravel out and wash it. They're going to blast out solid basalt and then crush it. And both the crusher and the blasting are extremely noisy. One of the problems with the the way that the county staff thus far and the applicants have treated this application is they're saying things like there's no impact on the adjacent properties, which is a fine standard if you're zoning because somebody doesn't like the color of your fence. But blasting can be heard miles away, and crushing can be heard maybe not miles, but a long way away. It's very noisy. Night lighting will impact people miles away. And the strategy that I think the applicants are taking is to try to pretend that this is a simple, ordinary zoning request on the same order as if I want to open a gas station or a, any kind of thing, and the neighbors don't like it. It's only the immediate neighbors that they're willing to address in their application. That's not adequate. They need to address the entire area. And if this was to be presented as an application under the Sustainable Growth Management Plan that is coming into effect but unfortunately doesn't apply to this application, this would be called a project of countywide importance or countywide impact, and it would be evaluated in terms of these broad-scale impacts, not just what do the immediate neighbors think.
Why does it not fit under the...
The Sustainable Growth Management Plan, that's not in effect legally yet. It's only just been adopted. And one thing that it seems clear the applicants are trying to do is make sure that they get this through before it comes into effect, in the same way that they tried to avoid having a hearing in front of the Office of State Engineer, which would be much more complicated for them to get water rights transferred than it was to go to the county and just buy some.
Before we leave the topic of the impacts as well, the one of the things we haven't really talked about yet in detail is the Cerritos Hills State Park. That is one of the sustainable pieces of the local economy. And since the Cerritos Hills Park became a state park in 2010, visitorship has grown at over 8% per year. That is a sustainable part of our economy locally, and the Waldo Canyon Road, whose access would pass directly next to that mine and whose viewshed would be majorly impacted by this project, is the gateway entrance that's been designated for that park. So when we're talking that it's not going to have impacts on the neighboring properties, neighboring means something quite different when you get out into that part of the county.
We're talking to Diane Senior, Kim Sorvig, and Jan Willem Janssens about La Bajada Mesa and the proposed gravel mining project there. Jan Willem, talk more about environmental impacts and what it looks like for wildlife on the Mesa right now.
Yeah, thanks. The fragmentation that I was just talking about really would affect what is called conservation values. We have, we're basically with this La Bajada area in the most western part of the Galisteo Basin. And the Galisteo Basin was identified by residents in 2004 and also under the planning process of the Sustainable Growth Management Plan in 2008-09-10 as an area with significant conservation values. I helped co-author a report on that in 2010. The Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative, and several other studies have been done specifically regarding wildlife there. The areas that are specifically important regarding conservation is the natural vegetation on the mesa, which is of high quality, and the wildlife connectivity from there towards the Jemez Mountains, but also towards the south.
You say the natural vegetation is of high quality. What do you mean? Like for grazing or in general? Or
there is apparently a diversity of grasses and other species in that grassland. And I've looked at maps that as part of the wildlife habitat mapping and an assessment program for that area, or it's actually a statewide program that covers that area, that identified the local vegetation as relatively high. Of importance. And so that then also explains why the area is of use as a passing corridor to wildlife. In fact, the entire Galisteo Basin has been identified as a wildlife passage area, a linkage basically between the Sandia Mountains and the Manzana Mountains to the south and the Sangre de Cristo Mountains to the north and Ahemis to the northwest.
So it's not only that deer and other wildlife pass through it, they stop and eat.
They stop and eat. And so a landscape like this has many different functions for wildlife. They hang out or live there for specific species that might be for their entire lifetime. For other species like bear, cougar, and deer, they pass through within 1 year, maybe once in their lifetime, maybe many times in their lifetime. And so that is important because if we have a drought, if we have fires, or if certain pressures of human habitation are increasing for a period of time, these animals need to leave that area because they don't like to be disturbed for their procreation, for their livelihood, for their well-being. So if we start severing areas where they like to live, then they cannot find mates, and eventually their gene pool will be depleted, and then they'll be more likely to succumb to diseases, or their populations will shrink to the point that they're actually dying out in specific areas.
That was such an important insight that I've learned from you and others talking about wildlife corridors, that if you have a bunch of bears living in one area, and they're cut off from the bunch of bears living in another area, they might find mates, but they could become inbred. And that is, in fact, what happens. And so Yes. You get these inbred animals, and they don't survive in the long run.
Yeah, and what we've known for a while in the Galisteo Basin, for instance, is that there is deer and pronghorn there that, because they cannot move, start to overgraze certain areas. And because they don't have any predators anymore, there is no wolves, there is here and there a few cats. And so they then have suddenly, if it's a dry year, they're faced with having eaten their own stock and not able to move. Or if suddenly a harsh winter storm comes, they're being trapped in a canyon and will die by the dozens at a time.
And it's interesting to me also that, I mean, when we talk about projects like this, it might be this mine, it might be another industrial use, and it's the sum total of those different uses that fragment the land so much that it becomes like a, what was that metaphor? It's like if you cut up a rug, at what point does it stop being a rug?
Yes, absolutely. And so that has been identified for the last 25 years here, for instance, here in New Mexico. And wildland connectivity plans have been made for up and down the Rocky Mountains, and all these groups that have been working on these things the last couple decades have now formed a big coalition called the Western Wildway Network. And this group has been meeting now 9 consecutive years. I actually went to their meeting just 2 weeks ago in Salt Lake City, where we worked on a campaign for connectivity of wildlands between Mexico and Alaska. And in that meeting, we identified all the areas that are of critical concern, and the northern Rio Grande area, with specifically the Galisteo Basin or Galisteo Wildway, is one of the 20 areas of critical concern. And that's why we should all be understanding, I hope, that if we place one more obstacle, especially now for 25 years, in a pathway that is already of critical conservation value, for plants, for water, and for the animals that rely on those resources, that we're adding one more barrier to the survival of larger game species in New Mexico and to their survival in the long term across the entire continent.
So all of this is in relation to La Bajada Mesa, which we are talking about. So who has come together around this issue?
The entire state of New Mexico and even internationally, as far as I can tell. La Bajada Mesa matters incredibly for more than the sum of its pieces for many of the people who live here. And there is a broad coalition of neighbors, various organizations within the communities, and we've got the support of Wild Earth Guardians. We've got the support of Sierra Club. We've got the support of major environmental organizations in addition to local organizations that range from the La Cienega Valley Association to the San Marcos Association to the Turquoise Trail Association. One of the things we haven't really talked about at this point is the impact on the economy and local businesses that rely on that. The Turquoise Trail Association is concerned about the impact of on the Turquoise Trail National Scenic Byway when you take a major component of the scenery and start to degrade it. People within the community are coming together on that point. And at this, we have a petition drive going in addition to urging people to come out to the hearing. The petition drive online has garnered over 3,300 signatures already, and we have almost 1,000 more on paper. This is an enormous outpouring of support, and we've had support, obviously, lots of that locally. People here who live here are very concerned, but visitors who are coming in are appalled at the thought that we might do this to the landscape and to the very place, the reason they're coming to visit in many cases. And we have had signers to the petition from, believe it or not, as far away as Bulgaria. So...
Well, all right. Closer to home, we also have cultural importance and historical importance that we haven't really mentioned. It's kind of quiet, but the Pueblos have sites that are culturally important to them all along La Bajada. They're not well studied by archaeologists, but they are still very important. And La Bajada itself is probably the only place where the Camino Real that ran up from Mexico City essentially intersects and overlaps Route 66. Some of the first Fred Harvey tours were down to the Pueblos at the bottom of La Bajada, and going up and down the switchbacks was one of the big thrills. So La Bajada has a very long cultural and historic significance to lots of people. I'm happy to have the Bulgarians with us, but the way this matters to Hispanic history in this area, to the extremely long history of the Pueblos, is even more important. And what's really ironic when we talk about the economics of it, what's going to push these people to try to override all this cultural value is basalt. Basalt is the most common type of rock on the planet. There are 40 major outcroppings of it in New Mexico alone. That's more than one per county. Shiprock is a basalt outcropping, and nobody's proposing to mine it. There is plenty of basalt. There is a mine at Caja del Rio that is run much more sustainably than the proposal would be. This is not a necessary expansion except for the private profits of the people that are proposing it.
Who seem to be, from the way you guys are describing it, the only winners in this game, if it were to go through. Now, okay, a basalt gravel pit, is there a gravel shortage?
There is no gravel shortage. Statistics from the Department of Mines and Minerals show that over the past 5 years, Santa Fe County alone has produced more than 210,000 tons of excess gravel.
Excess gravel.
So that is more gravel produced than they sold. And it's worth noting that those figures do not include the Cajal del Rio quarry, which is not part of those reporting figures. So the numbers could actually be significantly higher than that. But that is proving that there is absolutely no need for this. And if there were, there are far better suited places in the county for it to be located. And that mine, that Cajal del Rio mine, is an example of, as Kim pointed out, sustainable way to do this. It's located next to the county landfill. It uses piped effluent water, wastewater, for its dust control and gravel washing. And they're perfectly able to then take that cavity that's left behind and use it for county refuse. So it is as symbiotic a relationship as you could possibly have. Why we would be considering taking an historic landmark and reducing that to rubble is beyond me.
So if this were to go through, what 25 years from now, let's say a big swath of the La Bajada Mesa were mined, what would be left when it was all done?
Well, the pit would be left completely unrestored, even though the application makes gestures towards revegetation. They're specifically exempted from having to do any revegetation down in the area they blasted out. That's solid rock. They can't do it, to be fair. They also are exempted from having to restore vegetation on the access roads that they put in. And anything that is outside of the pit, it probably won't be restored anyhow, because they will consider it not to be disturbed by their activity. So nothing would be likely to get restored after this. There is a sad history, despite federal and state legislation requiring vegetation on any project, down to about an acre in size, that there are no inspectors, nobody goes out and looks, and they throw some seed around, splash a little water over it, and walk away. The proposal and the land use law coincide in saying that they only have to make one effort. Anybody who's tried horticulture in this part of the country knows that you're not going to get things to grow in one try, but they are specifically exempted from having to try until they get actual vegetation.
So basically, we're left with a moonscape.
Yeah, that's, I think, a pretty good... they may be able to leave the front edge of the cliff that we know as La Bajada, so that when you're driving up I-25, you have this sort of movie set of a cliff behind which is the moonscape of all the pits. And if we could trust that it was only 50 acres, it might not be absolutely terrible. But it's very clear that this is a foot-in-the-door maneuver. Their real estate site lists all 5,000 acres as aggregate, meaning gravel, that's what it's good for. That's how they want to sell it to somebody.
So they're basically trying to mine it and trying to sell it simultaneously?
Go figure. There is a long history, too, of mines expanding beyond what they're permitted to do. There's a lawsuit in Placidas going on with this. There was a long history of this in the Jemez Mountains with mines that were permitted for one area and just ate up adjacent acres because nobody was looking. That's something we're very concerned with.
Yeah, and in terms of trying to sell it while they're trying to mine it, it's important for them right now to establish this as a mining zone. They purchased the land as agricultural and residential. Now they're trying to sell it as mining property. They're trying to justify a $65 million price tag for that property, and the only way they can do it is to show that it has mining potential.
Right.
And that means that they're trying to sell it now for its aggregate production potential. And they've got it listed as 5,000 acres of aggregate.
So this is probably to try to attract much, much bigger companies from out of state, or, you know, the Chinese government, who can afford to bring in the kind of mega machinery and manpower to mine the entire thing. My guess is that Buena Vista and Rockology don't have the ability to do that on a grand scale by themselves, but I think that's one of the reasons they're trying to push the price up, is that they can sell it to the big guys.
What is the best use of this land in your view?
There's been proposals for this to be developed in some way that protects traditional agriculture and traditional villages like La Cienega, at the same time as there's careful development of park-like uses. One name this has gone under is National Monument Designation. Mayor Koss did actually put in a formal proposal for that hasn't happened yet. It would be a while out. But by actively attracting tourism, recreational use, film use, and all of the things you can do with gorgeous topography like there is out there, the amount of money that would be generated in the regional economy would, by a conservative estimate, be 10 or 20 times what the mine will ever produce, if it ever produces anything.
Yeah, I'd like to add that in the sustainable growth management plan for Santa Fe County, and with the code, even when that's being finally adopted and active, this area is basically set aside not for development, because the different levels of development for the next 30 years are in specific zones, you could say, immediately around Santa Fe. And this area would not be touched by that. And so this area was, and I think that the larger community would agree with that, that it's largely an area that should be set aside for conservation as a gateway into Santa Fe to underscore its tourist value, to underscore the habitat values, the wildlife corridor and linkage values that are present in this area and so important for the much larger regional and even national and international context.
So if people listening to this broadcast are interested in this issue and want to get involved, there's a meeting on Thursday at 4 o'clock at the county offices on Grant Avenue, which is right on the corner of Grant and Palace Avenue in downtown Santa Fe. What's going on there? Should citizens show up?
Absolutely. This is our opportunity to show the county that this matters to us and your opportunity to make your voice heard. So we're encouraging everyone to please come out to the county hearing. Again, 4 o'clock this coming Thursday at 102 Grant Avenue. That is the first hearing before the County Development Review Committee. Please come out for that. Please also visit the website for more information.
And that's SaveLaBajada.org.
Yes, and for people who aren't great at spelling, that's SaveLaBajada.org. There you can find more information about the issues. You can stay up to date with what's happening with the hearing. In the event that anything gets rescheduled or needs to change, that will be posted there. And also, please consider adding your name to the petition. There's a link to that on the website, as well as a very short video that highlights what's going on the Mesa, and you can see the area for yourself.
So, once again, 102 Grant Avenue in the County Commission Chambers, which are upstairs in the County Commission building. Diane Senior is a member of the Rural Conservation Alliance, and I guess you can get to that group through the Save La Bajada website as well?
So, again, and the website is www.SaveLaBajada.org.
And I'll link to that on my website as well. Diane Senior, member of the Rural Conservation Alliance. Kim Sorvig, Research Associate Professor of Architecture and Planning at University of New Mexico, and he's an expert on sustainability and ecological impacts. And Jan Willem Janssens, President of Ecotone and expert on wildlife and watershed issues. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you,
Mary Charlotte.